tuning in. It's April 23rd, Thursday night. Got Mike here with me like I always do. How's it going, buddy? I'm your host, Justin.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. This is a pretty exciting time. We got a great NBA playoffs going on, and with 7 days until the NFL draft officially kicks off, with everything that everybody said Chip Kelly's going to do with this chaotic offseason, I want to ask everyone one question, and that's if you think the Eagles are better today than they were at the end of last year. Now, that's a new quarterback. Who knows what Sam Bradford's going to be this year? I'm just saying, at this point, do you think Chip Kelly has done more good or harm to this team? Now, me and Justin are giving our input later in the show, and we're going to ask the guests or two to see what they think. But what I want to get to right away is the amazing overtime win of the San Antonio Spurs. It was a crazy run down the stretch.
I really thought that the Clippers were going to win that game. Now, granted, I fell asleep at halftime because, like, it was just the game was just too late. I fell asleep.
10:30 is a tough time.
But from the first half, I was like, the Clippers are going to run away with it.
Yeah, it's Father Time. Tim Duncan just keeps on scoring, keeps on winning. And it's funny, every other series actually in the NBA right now is 2-0. And they're the only team to go 1-1, and it's probably the best first round series you're going to see in a long time. These two teams have been playoff contenders. I mean, the Spurs have been to 3 straight finals, and to see, really, to me, it was without Tony Parker, without Ginobili, down late in the fourth quarter. I mean, for the Spurs to come back the way they did, and then to go in overtime and execute flawlessly. Clippers had no defense for anything the Spurs did down the stretch. The last 2 minutes of the first 2 minutes of overtime, it was really no answer. And it was really, to me, the maturation of Patty Mills. And this is a kid who, I don't even think he had a point till the fourth quarter, or maybe late in the third quarter. I think he came in and got like 8 points really quick on three or four shooting. And he guided them down the stretch when Tony Parker, now you don't know if he's going to come back, and Manu's not who he once was, so it's really time for, and it goes to show how great the Spurs are to stockpile these players. Last year was Kyrie Leonard. Now he's a healthy guy. He's a contributor. He's a star. Now this year maybe it's Patty Mills who goes and has to run this playoff for the Spurs.
Yeah, Patty Mills definitely rising to be one of the more clutch players in the NBA.
18 points in the second half, you know what I mean? That's prime time.
Now, I usually don't agree with anything that Skip Bayless says, but he said earlier today that Patty Mills is probably the most clutch player in the finals this year, or in the playoffs this year, and I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with that.
Oh, after that game he put on last night, I mean, he was all over the floor. He was a one-man fast break, and it was really fun to see. But there's going to be some great series just in the West. And you know, if Cleveland gets to the end, or you see where Atlanta goes. But speaking of Atlanta, especially coming out of from Philadelphia, we all remember Kyle Korver. We all remember, he can't play defense. He can't run. He's just a shooter. Well, Kyle Korver scored 21 points. He's the leading scorer for the Hawks. In the playoffs right now, in their first round, for the number one seed in the East, over LeBron James and all these big names and Kevin Love and all that, it's Kyle Korver. And I'll tell you right now, Deron Williams cost them their game. I can't believe, for someone who's so talented,
he just doesn't care.
He really must not care. 1-for-7 shooting for 2 points. Now, this is the crazy part. His plus-minus is minus 11. Now, to remind you, for all you who didn't see the game, they lost by 5 points. So when you're the starting point guard for your team and you're responsible for being on the floor for more points than your team even lost by, and you only score 2 points, you take more, you miss more shots than points you lose by. I mean, that is unacceptable. But to move on, another thing that to develop today.
I have to pull up how much he makes after you told me that. Minus 11, right?
Minus 11 in the playoff game.
And they lost by 5.
They lost by 5.
and he's making $16.4 million this year.
$16 million. He couldn't. He has it. He scored.
Wow.
Okay, $16 million has amounted to 15 points in two playoff games versus the Atlanta Hawks. They don't even have a great defensive point guard. Not saying. I mean, they're a team. They're a good team, and
they're not a team of stars.
Right. They're as fundamental as they come, and to watch Kyle Korver kill it the way he does, and you know what I mean. Not to. I don't want to dwell too much on the Hawks, so I want to move on a little bit because I want to talk about Rondo.
Ooh. One of my guys.
And I'll tell you, I was the guy who jumped on the bandwagon when he went to the Mavericks in the first place. And I'll tell you,
we all did.
They
we
were
a
worse team since he's been there. And for him now, he has a back injury. Who knows if that's real or, I mean, he's definitely probably hurting. But if they really probably wanted him, if this was a chip run, I bet Rondo's playing. But one thing is that the GM said, and I was watching today, the GM said when talking about Rondo, he said, you know, he didn't say anything bad about Rondo. All he said was, the reporter asked him after all the other questions, basically he was like, will Rondo play another game for the Mavericks? And within 2 seconds, the GM just says real quick, no. I mean, I've never heard you usually say, well, we'll see what happens, and, you know, Rondo's a great player. Nothing like that, just quick, no. So you definitely know he did not fit what the Mavs want, and we'll see. They're down 0-2. Statistically, 83% of teams who lose the first two games lose the series. But game three, if they win game three.
Where's the game three at?
It's in the Mavs.
Okay.
And it's funny. The NBA playoffs right now, they kind of parallel each other. The 1, 2, and 3 seeds are all up 2-0. Well, except the Clippers is the aberration, and you know, with the way that Tim Duncan and the way they play with the age over there, they're always the aberration. But as far as the rest of it, the top, Bulls and the Cavaliers and the Hawks are all up 2-0. And then both 5 seeds are actually 2-0. The Grizzlies have won twice. And the Wizards have won twice.
Ooh, I watched that Wizards game the other night, you know, every other day.
I mean, John Wall is an incredible athlete. Incredible athlete.
It took him a couple of years to figure it out. Once he did, he definitely showed why he was number one pick. Wasn't he his top pick?
Yeah, he was the number one pick.
Guess
the year Evan Turner.
I was going to say, guess who number two was.
And he's a bum. Evan Turner's a bum. Every time I watch him, I can't believe he's playing in the playoffs right now. I can't believe he even gets to do that again.
With Boston. But it's all
like,
right. LeBron's going to end that real soon.
I've seen him make, I think he's probably scored, he's probably scored a couple baskets, but I've seen him make so many bonehead plays already. Like, half the times he gets the ball, he tries to be LeBron James.
Oh, no, why are you talking about me like that?
That's not quite right. But at this point, you know what I mean, I'm ready. I could care less about Evan Turner. As long as every time I see Evan Turner, all I think is DeMarcus Cousins. Where the Sixers would be with Iggy.
But they
and
wouldn't.
Cousins.
But think about it. They wouldn't have had it. They wouldn't have Embiid right now. They wouldn't have Nerlens. Who's trending upwards?
You know, maybe they would have gotten Nerlens.
No. Listen. Who's
Cousins.
Trending upwards more?
I don't know.
Sacramento or Philadelphia?
Listen. What I'll say is this: when you look at the NBA, there are 3 teams in the East in the playoffs with under 500 records.
I know. It's terrible.
So when you look at the Sixers, if they're a young team next year and their guys play, there's no doubt in my mind they don't go to the playoffs. And to me, I mean, you look at the Cavaliers, yeah, they're beating the Celtics right now by 8 points a game, but, like, I mean, they should be smacking that. So for me to think that the Sixers can't get hot with a team like the Hawks at the top of the East right now, I mean, I say Cavaliers are definitely a better team. They're probably going to win the East. But I don't know if the Bulls are ready.
I don't know. Derrick Rose looks really good right now.
I mean,
nobody's going to compete against the Cavaliers in the East, though.
To me, if you're talking about the Bulls, it's how good can Jimmy Butler do? Because you know what Derrick Rose is going to give you, but he's not enough by himself. You don't win the game by yourself. So for me, you got to beat. You know, you're going to have to beat the Hawks who do it with everybody. They had 5 scorers last night with more than 12 points. So when you do it that consistent and that's your starting 5, you know what I mean? It's hard. They had their power forward hit, went 4 for 4 from 3 because he was probably wide open with everyone. that they spaced the floor so well. So if you're going to beat a team like that, I mean, Derrick Rose is not going to do it by himself. They score a lot of points, and they're the teams who have always statistically beaten the Bulls in the end.
Well, did you hear all the MVP chants for Derrick Rose during the one game?
Derrick Rose is playing like a monster, and I'm happy to see it. I hope he has a long, great career. He was one of the you know, not even just the best point guards, just the best players in the league. Just so explosive and so uncontainable. He was like an AI who cared about his teammates and passed. You know what I mean? So to see him back and flourishing in the playoffs, it's really a great sight to see. And you know what I mean? You're starting to stop holding your breath every time he takes a crazy step and goes down. And maybe he'll even be able to get better and get back to his step. And you never know. Sitting out all that time, all less that wear and tear on his body, he might be prime for a new prime. I'll never be, after watching Adrian Peterson rush for 2,000 yards almost.
No, over almost 2,100.
Oh, he was short of the record.
Yeah, he
did.
That's
right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Seeing him do that the year after he tore his Achilles, I mean, what else can there be said about modern medicine? So that's why when people ask me, you know what I mean, talk a little bit about the Eagles, like you're asking me about Sam Bradford. You know, when was he in a good environment anywhere else with the Rams? They were a terrible team. When has even a good quarterback gone to one of those teams other than Andrew Luck? I mean, he's what? I've never seen a rookie who I said Hall of Fame other than Andrew Luck. I mean, he really just came out running. Like, you maybe say it about Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning had a tough rookie season. But to really talk about what you have with Sam Bradford as the number one overall pick who with a new situation, and you've seen in the past, when guys have a rough start, have a few injuries, they move to a new team, now you got the sports science of Chip Kelly. If anybody can get the all out of this kid, I'll put my money on Chip. And we'll talk a little later about what's going on. We'll talk a little later about the show with the big interview today with the GM gave. Well, not, I guess not the GM. I mean, that is the player personnel guy, Marowitz, and he was on for almost 20 minutes. And if there was any doubt in people's mind who was, you know, if Chip was running the show and all by himself, you know, that was put to shame. You know what I mean? You knew that. You knew Chip wasn't stubborn. I mean, people said Chip is his own guy and he has his own thing, but I've never heard anybody come out and say it's Chip's way or the highway. You know, you might, I mean, you see Harry Roseman get moved, but maybe he wasn't his guy. I mean, this guy came from Alabama. This guy's been around Parcells. He's been around a lot of great coaches, and he said himself, he's not a yes man, and that's what you're going to need. You need a lot of strong opinions. If you look at how Seattle built their team, you see what Pete Carroll and the culture he built there. It wasn't how many first-round picks they got. I mean, their quarterback came from the third round. It wasn't a guy who everybody thought was going to be the winner. Richard Sherman wasn't Richard Sherman when he was drafted in the fifth round. Earl Thomas, I mean, we don't even want to talk about Earl Thomas in Philadelphia. We have Brandon Graham. I mean, not to say Brandon Graham's a good player now, and now he's on outside linebacker. How many years is this? I mean, Earl Thomas is the best safety in the league at a position where there's three safeties in the league who can't even be mentioned in the topic of him. And one of the other two guys on that list is the guy who plays next to him, Cam Chancellor, another later round pick.
Absolutely. And we got our first guest on the line right now. We got Justin Panatti from Up All Night News. Going to come on and talk some NBA with us. Hey, Justin, you're on the line with Justin and Mike. How's it going?
How's it going?
Not too bad. We're doing pretty good. So you happened to catch the overtime game last night of the Spurs Clippers.
What was that? Sorry. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, it was really nice to see how Patty Mills stepped up at the end, and you're going to have to see a lot more of him. Have you about how long Tony Parker is going to be out for?
You know, I'm not 100% sure, but Patty Mills is he's a really key player for the Spurs. If they're going to make a run at all, they need good point guard production. And honestly, I mean, you know, Parker hasn't been normal Parker this year anyways, and so one thing Patty Mills can do is he can really shoot, and that's something that Parker isn't necessarily well, he's an okay shooter, but he's not the most consistent shooter ever. And so, you know, getting that extra shooter out there can really open things up for the Spurs, especially, you know, with the way, you know, Kawhi is playing so well, but he's not necessarily much of a shooter. And they kind of need to play Tiago Splitter if he's, you know, if he's healthy versus Blake. You know, so they do need as much shooting as possible. And so Patty Mills gives them a lot of options, and you know I'm a pretty big Patty Mills fan myself, so it is nice to see him playing well.
Oh, definitely. And actually, it's kind of funny, even when Tony Parker was in there, it might be because he was a little injured, it looked like the flow was better with Patty Mills. Like, just like you said, the extra shooter to space the floor, it looked like it was helping their space and helping them get some good shots for D. Allen and Danny, two clutch threes.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's definitely not necessarily a knock on Parker, but he really hasn't been playing that well. I mean, if you look into some of the more advanced numbers, his season has actually not been very good, and they've actually been a little bit better with Patty Mills on the floor. And you know, Parker isn't necessarily the best shooter in the world, and so I think a concern might be that Parker is losing a few years here, and you know, if he's not 100%. Parker and can get to the rim like he normally has been able to, you know, there could be some, you know, justification for, you know, them actually being better with Patty Mills out there. It might not be the craziest thing in the world.
Right. And going back to San Antonio now, what do you think the Spurs' chances of taking the series down? And what is your pick for, I guess, tomorrow's game, correct?
You know, Spurs are awesome. So I it's tough to pick against Spurs. I kind of think the Clippers are going to win this series, though. I mean, it is tough to say that with the Spurs. You know, they tied it up 1-1 in Los Angeles, so now they're going to San Antonio. And normally, the old adage is when the home team loses, that's when we have a series. This is by far the best first round series, and it's the one that is the most interesting to me. And I think the winner of this series is primed to have a really nice Western Conference run here. You know, I kind of do think this is going to be the Clippers, though. I mean, Chris Paul is playing with an absolute, you know, he's playing like he's got something to prove. And I mean, he does have something to prove, and he's the best player on the court right now. And so, you know, I do think if the Clippers can, you know, as long as Paul, Blake, and DeAndre are playing well, I mean, they have a pretty good core right there. And as long as those guys are healthy and playing well, I think they are going to be tough to beat, personally.
Yeah, it's so sad to watch these teams play in the first round. They both have such, you know what I mean? They probably beat almost any other team, maybe than Golden State in the conference. And, you know, luckily,
absolutely.
The NBA shows how strong the West is.
Well, yeah, and absolutely. I was so bummed to see this in the first round, because I was kind of thinking, I kind of don't want Golden State to win. I just have a weird thing where I just don't want the best team to win for some reason. But so I was kind of hoping that one of these teams would have to play Golden State in the second round, so they have to play San Antonio and then LA Clippers, or Clippers and then San Antonio. But yeah, they're both. I think, you know, Golden State's clearly the best team in the Western Conference, but I think San Antonio and LA, especially, you know, I know San Antonio is a sixth seed, but for the past 2 months they've been one of the three best teams in the West pretty clearly. So it is a little bit of a bummer that they have to play in the first round for sure.
Yeah, you know what, though, at the same time, with every other series going down 2-0, and really not many of the other teams look like having any chance of coming back. So it really gives us something to watch in this first round. And this game three, I think, to me, whoever wins the game three, and even that game last night, you didn't know the lead changes. I mean, San Antonio's up 10. Then the Clippers roar back. I mean, you don't know who's going to come out on top. I mean, I've never seen quite a game quite like that. So this game three, I think, is really going to decide it.
Yeah, for sure. I think the right way to look at this is it's almost more of like a second round matchup in the first round, because, you know, I think the winner of this game, I suppose that both teams do need to be healthy, though. They have a lot of, you know, they're very reliant on 3 to 4 players being awesome on both sides, but I mean, I think they're both better than, you know, Houston is looking good versus the Mavericks, but the Mavericks clearly are maybe not the team they looked like they were in the first half of the season before the Rondo trade. So, you know, the Houston's kind of cruising to a pretty comfortable lead in that series. But I think either the Spurs or the Clippers are pretty clearly better than Houston. Although Houston's good too. I wouldn't be overly shocked if they were to beat the Clippers, the winner of the Clippers Spurs. But I think that they would have to be a favorite.
Absolutely. And actually, talking about the Rondo trade, it appears that his days in Dallas are numbered. Who do you think is the most likely suitor for Rondo? Where do you see him playing next year? Because he's pretty much not going to be in Dallas anymore.
Yeah, I thought it was funny that, I don't know if you heard this, but the Carlisle had a press conference and they straight up asked him if Rondo was going to be a Maverick. He just said no. So I think he's pretty much not going to be a Maverick. I think it's pretty safe. It does seem like all signs are pointing to the LA Lakers. I don't know if that's necessarily the best fit for him because as we're kind of seeing in Dallas, it's, you know, he wants the ball in his hands and, you know, he's not really a scorer. Yeah, he's definitely not a scorer. And so, you know, if you take the ball out of his hands and put it in a guy like Kobe's hands, I don't necessarily know what Rondo does for you if he's not going to have the ball in his hands. But it does seem like the Lakers are the place he's going to go. I mean, you can make an argument that maybe a team like Utah might be a little bit more ideal for Rondo because they're a little bit, you know, they're a little, yeah, you know, they were the best defensive team in the league, I think, the last 30 or 40 games, but they definitely have an offense that stalls pretty easily at, you know, especially if Gordon Hayward is being shut down. They have almost no offensive pulse, and so I think they might be the type of team, you know, maybe Rondo should look at going to a team like the Jazz or, you know, just a team that's maybe a little bit more offensively challenged, I think would be, you know, and needs a guy that can handle the ball for, you know, 16 seconds on the shot clock and find a guy and find an open cutter or something like that.
Yeah, and I just feel like watching Rondo over the last 2 years, I mean, not even just him for his injuries, but it seems like the way the point guard position is played now, guys like him are almost getting devalued because you want to space the floor and there's so many three-point shooting point guards. So like you saw for the Mavericks and even like you mentioned what happened with Tony Parker for the Spurs, I wonder if a new era of point guard is really being born.
Yeah, you know, and I think I think anything can really work. I know space and pace is pretty in vogue right now, and it's in vogue for a reason because it works really well, and it's really easy to fit a bunch. It's really easy to get guys to fit around that a space and pace system, and there's a lot of point guards that kind of fit that mold right now of you know, having one guy that does a lot of the work offensively, and you know, he finds open 3-point shooters, but it works because it works a little better than Rondo because there are threats to actually score at the ball too. So. Rondo is definitely a very traditional point guard, and it would require a very traditional, like a very old school offense, even not even traditional, but just like a, you know, an older offense. But I think plenty of things can work in the NBA. I mean, you look at a team like Memphis; they're very like not a '90s type team, and they are very scared of even shooting 3-pointers except for Mike Conley. So you know that you know it's you know clearly you know. Other ideas can work, and old school ideas, and you know, different types of ideas can work. But you know, space and pace is in vogue for a reason because it works really well, and it's, you know, you can fit a lot of, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, dependent on having a star player to make space and pace work. So yeah, I think it will be tough for Rondo to find a niche and a good fit, but I don't think it's impossible. I think if a team is willing to, or interested in running a more old school type offense, I think it could work for sure.
Well, let's go a little bit back to the playoffs, and I want to talk about the East a little bit. Watching Atlanta go up 2-0. I guess I'm not pleased to Atlanta being in the playoffs, but I mean, watching Deron Williams in this game too go 1-for-7 for 2 points. I mean, it to see how far he's really come in the last couple of years with all the promise he showed early, it's really really been an awful display.
Yeah, you know, and it's weird. I actually wrote a piece on this for Up All Night, but I was actually surprised. I was looking at the NBA RPM stat, which is like a adjusted plus minus, and Deron Williams actually had a pretty underrated season. I mean, you know, people kind of you know, poo-poo on him. And he's not very good. He's terrible defensively is the bigger issue. But he's really just kind of become he's become more of almost I guess he's pretty much just like he's more like a streak scorer, like a Jason Terry type now than he is a point guard. And that's really the problem. And the Nets had a lot of success last year when they had Sean Livingston in the lineup. They had a lot of success with it was Livingston, Deron Williams, Paul Pierce, Joe Johnson, and then Garnett and Lopez, I think, when he was healthy. But that lineup worked because Livingston was almost more of the point guard. And, you know, Deron Williams is basically a DH, and he just is good at scoring at this point, you know. So that's kind of what he's devolved to. And it is, and you're right, it is a bummer. I mean, I think he's maybe a little bit better than he's being represented, but at the same time, it's like, you know, everyone was curious who was the better point guard in like 2008, 2009 between him and Chris Paul. And it's, you know, not only is it not close between those two, I mean, Williams is maybe not even in the top 16 or 17 point guards in the NBA anymore. So, you know.
Right. We looked up earlier today, he's making $16.5 million this year. So I guess the fans up in Brooklyn, you know what I mean, they're probably not too happy with that. But it's actually fun to see a team like come on. But who do you think is going to come out of the East? Who's your pick?
Oh, man, it's tough to root against. It's tough to pick against the Cavs. I love the Hawks, and I think the bigger issue with the Hawks too is like Paul Millsap is having injury issues right now, and they're just kind of like a little banged up all over the place, and that's coming through a little bit. And I would love it to be the Hawks, and I think if they can get 100% healthy and everything's going right by the Cleveland series, I do think that will be a tough matchup for the Cavs. But I mean, the Cavaliers train is rolling pretty hard right now, and they're just kind of starting to even get Kevin Love rolling too, which is scary because they've been playing insanely well offensively, and Love still is, you know, even when the Cavs have been clicking, you know, Love is still kind of, you know, as some games he looks great and other games it looks like he doesn't fit still. And you know, it's kind of terrifying that they still have that ace in their pocket where if they can get Kevin Love on track, you know, they even have another gear to hit potentially with their potential as an offense. So, you know, it's tough. You know, I love LeBron, and it's just tough to root against. It's tough to pick against LeBron. It's tough to root against him. And I haven't been a very big Kyrie Irving fan in the past, but it's, you know, in one of my biggest issues with Irving is that I don't think he's a point guard either, kind of like Deron Williams. You know, he's really kind of like he's an excellent scorer. He's excellent at getting to the basket and hitting three-pointers off of the bounce in insane ways and from, you know, 28 feet out off the dribble. It's, you know, but he's not necessarily a point guard. And the beauty of this is he doesn't have to be the point guard because LeBron is the point guard now. So the Cavs are looking really good, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a great fit.
Absolutely. And since we're talking about favorites, who's your favorite to win the MVP? All season long, I've been saying Steph Curry. I know Mike wants James Harden, so we need somebody to break the tie. Who's your favorite to win the MVP?
Oh, man, I'm sorry to do this to you, but I'm going James Harden because I have nothing against Steph Curry, and if they give him the MVP, I can totally get behind that. I tend to award players that have a little bit harder of a task, I think. And that might not be an accurate way of awarding an MVP award. You know, maybe it should just go to the best player on the best team, and I'm fine with that. But I tend to like the guys that, you know, Harden is pretty much single-handedly carrying the Rockets to being good. And I think that is interesting and impressive in its own way. And so that's kind of how I have decided that I think Harden is the MVP, but I would not argue if Steph Curry wins it, and I won't argue with anyone that's, you know, Steph is the man, yeah, and the Warriors are the bomb. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong, James Harden had an excellent season. He definitely put Houston on his back, but Steph Curry, he's a killer. Killer out there with that three.
I gotta say this: I've been a pretty big James Harden fan my entire life. Though, I mean, I remember the day he got traded from Oklahoma City. I was just like so I was just like almost depressed. A, because it was like, you know, that Oklahoma City team could have been so fun, but B, I was like, why didn't my team trade for him too? I was just like, I've been a James Harden fan for a long time, so I kind of got a little biased there as well too. So
I understand how you feel. I felt the same way when Brian Dawkins signed with the Broncos. So.
Oh yeah, but before we don't want to take too much of your time, but before we let you go, I want to know what are your feelings about the Sixers' plans and going in the next year? Do you think with three teams in the East below 500, I think, in the playoffs, what are their chances next year?
It's interesting because I don't necessarily know if they want to be competitive next year either. You know, again, I like what the Sixers are doing. I think it's really interesting, and I think they I definitely, I'm not a Sixers fan, and so as a non-Sixers fan, I am definitely terrified of if Sam Hinkie's plan is, realized to full potential. I think it could be absolutely terrifying. I'm very hopeful that they can draft D'Angelo Russell of Ohio State. I think he's probably the best fit for what they want to do. I mean, they've gone with, Nerlens Noel is looking like an absolute stud defensive prospect. You got Joel Embiid, I guess, is maybe a little bit of an off-court issue, but I mean, he's so talented and he was so good at Kansas that, if you can get healthy and get on the right track, you got Embiid, you got Noel, and then you got Dario Saric, who I really like Dario Saric. I think that's a good three-man front court. I think if you can get D'Angelo Russell in there, and Russell is, everyone talks about Okafor and Towns, but, Russell is every bit as good of a prospect as those two are. He's a wing, and he's a, I think people like to draft centers first, but, the Sixers have, two centers and a power forward that they've spent picks on. So I would really, strongly consider going D'Angelo Russell with their top pick. And if they can get him and then maybe they get another pick and can get maybe like a Tyus Jones later in the draft because they have so many assets and, they can add some shooting to that team. They're really scary. And probably the most impressive thing is not even the draft picks that they do, but the fact that they can – they're very good at signing like Robert Covington, I believe. Is that the guy, Robert Covington? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, they actually have the they're gonna have like the most cap out of anybody next year. So like after this year ends, I don't know how many good free agents there are, but they are they don't have anybody that they pay. The only guy they did pay was Thaddeus Young, and they traded him away real quick. So with the cap, actually, I think it's moving up a substantial number like next year. You can see with all those young guys, we've had a few veteran. Good NBA players, the sky's the limit. I just think you see in the NBA, it's hard to be a team to come from the middle to take it to the top unless, like, a guy like LeBron signs with you or there's very few teams. I mean, look how long Golden State was down. Now they're the team, other than San Antonio, that just keep stockpiling wins. And now as a new time, you see, like, even the Wizards are good again. And, now there's maybe 10 or 12 teams that are competitive over the next 5 years when before it was only three or four teams that's all at the top of everybody.
Yeah, for sure. No, and I think the Sixers have a very bright future. I mean, obviously, we need to see what they do with all these draft picks and whatnot. But, they can get, like, D'Angelo Russell and maybe make another trade and get, a Tyus Jones or maybe a Stanley Johnson even. Like, they have a – they could have a very scary future, and I'm definitely – they're the team I fear the most in terms of, teams that would prevent any other team from winning the title for, like, a three-year stretch. So I definitely am a fan of what they're doing.
Definitely. Hey, Justin, we really appreciate you taking some time out and jumping on the show with us tonight. We look forward to hopefully having you get on in the future.
Yeah, for sure, man. Thanks for having me on.
We'll get you in before the end of the playoffs. I know this is going to be a crazy end to this NBA season.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love the NBA playoffs. It's the best time of year for me.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, Justin. Everybody, that was Justin Pagani of Up All Night News. Check him out. We've had him on before in the past. Guy just knows basketball.
And, yeah, you know what? I do love basketball. But watching sometimes the regular season, maybe the next last 15, 20 games, and I think most of that comes from the Sixers being so bad. I know when I was a kid, when AY was here, I mean, my dad even had Sixers season tickets. And I went to, almost 20, probably almost 20, 30 games a year for probably a two-year stretch. But, since 2001, 2002, you really haven't seen any production out of that. You haven't seen any playoff runs. I mean, you had the one with Iguodala and them, but they really never had a chance. They beat a bum-legged Bulls team who was missing their two best players, and a Boston team a year away from breaking apart.
Yeah, dismantling.
Dismantling. So, really, there wasn't much to behold there.
No, not at all.
So, they were really not going anywhere. I mean, as a Sixers fan, I guess so. If you're gonna try to be good and be bad, I mean, I gotta hate on you. But if you're gonna say you're gonna be bad, but you're gonna be good later, and you pull it off, I'm gonna forget that bad time like nothing ever happened. So you know, next year if the Sixers come out and they're doing good, they're supposed to be bad again next year.
Next year
they're tanking again.
Yeah, next year's supposed to be the last tank.
The last tank.
Yeah. Supposedly. I mean, who knows? You could be perpetually tanking for another.
I remember them saying 2017 they were going to compete for the Eastern Finals.
Well, LeBron will be, I think, 32 or 33 then, so hopefully. But as far as I'm concerned, if he's in the East, they got to be the favorite.
Yeah, but I want to bring back a little to, let's go back to some Eagles.
Yeah, let's talk some football. We got Sean from Corner Pub Sports doing us later in a little bit. So they're doing us for Eagles.
We're going to warm it up for them, though.
Oh, yeah.
Coming a week away now. First, I just want to talk about the press conference.
Well, before that, let me address one of these rumors, and I have a question for you.
Hear it.
So you've heard the rumor of the three-team trade with San Diego, Tennessee, and Philadelphia. Let me ask you this. Say the Eagles didn't get the number two pick in that trade. Instead, Philip Rivers came here.
As good as quarterback as Philip Rivers is, even at this point in his career, under a different system, I think, or a different time, but Chip Kelly's trying to build, I think that would be a terrible move to bring a guy that old. I feel like Philip Rivers.
I don't think he's that old.
He's not that old, but I don't think he fits the system as far as he's kind of on the slower side for a quarterback. You know what I mean? Even like by quarterback standards, like he's like Nick Foles slow, and you see how Chip Kelly feels about Nick Foles slow. But what he's shown you is that Sam Bradford is his prototype. Now who knows? Maybe Sam Bradford's a trade chip, and you don't know. But one thing I'll say that the GM said today about that is that, as far as trading up and sacrificing the future, the GM came out and said, now who knows what this means? He said, you know, anything can happen with any deal that's good enough. But he says, I have 8 picks in this draft. He expects to take more than 8, not less. So I don't think that they're going to trade up and give up a first and a third or something like that, go get Mariota. I don't think they need that much. And speaking of, I feel like a reason to that, the needs for their team is cornerback, wide receiver, offensive line, safety, and I still think outside linebacker. And I say that for a depth issue because you don't know what you're going to get out of Marcus Smith, whenever he's going to be, you know, first-round pick from last year. And really after that, Travis Long was the guy who got a torn ACL in the last game of the preseason, so you can't really rely on him to come in and give you solid backup minutes. So you just have Connor Barnes, and you're solid, but he's got to come off the field at some point, and Brandon Graham, and they both have to come off the field at some point, especially with the way Chip Kelly plays. They have so many plays.
Well, don't you think that they might play Kiko Alonso outside?
No, I mean, who knows?
Because you have three inside linebackers.
Right, but talk to me when all three are healthy.
Two of which can play outside.
I don't know if Kendricks doesn't put his hand in the ground sometimes.
I don't know. I think he's a little small to do that.
I think he's shown by now that his size does not mean anything because I've seen him shed blocks. He defends the run as good as any, you know?
I would not mind to see the Eagles draft his brother.
Yeah, but I don't want to see a pick high on a linebacker. Like, when I say OLB, like, I'm thinking a guy who can come in and maybe play later in the year because I haven't seen them address it necessarily in free agency. They have a lot of inside linebackers, so maybe they're feeling they can go a different way.
You know what I mean? So they definitely have other people they feel they can put their hand down on the outside and do different things. So I don't know if you, like you said, Alonzo. But then again, to me, when I say you say to me Kendricks, Ryans, and Alonzo, right now, Alonzo and Ryans are both coming off injuries. So to me, right now, I say only one of them is going to play the whole year. You know, you might only expect to have one of them. I mean, who knows? They both can come back and have a good year, but Ryans is old. And with a young player, you never know if it's going to come, how they're going to react and how hard he's worked at his rehab. So for you to say both of them are going to come back and you're going to have three, I mean, I feel like they're going to be happy if two of the three of them, Kendricks, Ryans, and Alonzo, are healthy any given week. Because last year, you had one of the two of them with Ryans and Kendricks most of the year, and you were fine. So if you have two of the three, you're doing fine. And they got guys like Brad Jones. They have better backups now. And more
that is
depth
true.
There.
That is true. That is very true. They do have more depth at the inside. But I mean,
but when you know what I mean. When you look at though, when you look at their wide receiver core though, see, this is why to me, I think if I'm the Eagles, I don't look at one position and say I need a great player here now. You know what I mean? Every position has competition, and to me, Landon Collins at 20 is not a fit. He's not. A man corner.
Listen.
There's another safety.
Well, no, Landon Collins is the safety.
I'm saying there's another safety after Landon Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Who's more of a in the box. He's more of a Malcolm Jenkins type player, and it's played well. And he came from a third or fourth round pick, and now he's going in from the bottom of the second round to maybe even the top of the second round.
Listen, I was reading the scouting report on Landon Collins the other day. The same scouting report was given to Landon Collins, was given to Mark Barron, was given to LaRon Landry.
I mean, LaRon Landry's name I like. He played, but he's
I'm saying I don't like that.
Right. I don't
Mark
like Barron, Mark Barron.
He's on his second team in 3 years, I think.
Right. I don't think they like him.
No. Well, no. I think he's with Tennessee now, isn't he? No. The Redskins, I think.
I don't think they like Landon Collins. He doesn't fit their system. He's an enforcer safety. We want another Malcolm Jenkins. We want a guy who can go up and play man to man. We want him at the corner, so like a corner who plays safety. So to me, there's the other safety in the class, and I'm not even going to try to butcher his name. But the other safety in the class, I was watching today on ESPN that he's been moving off the board a lot.
Sorry, he plays for St. Louis.
What?
Mark Barron.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said the Redskins. He plays in St. Louis.
So I wouldn't necessarily go there. See, either to me, if you're going to take one of those good tackles who can come in and play guard this year, not that I don't think the Eagles can have a right guard on the roster right now who can play right guard this year and they can do good with. But to me, when you're showing me Peters is past his years and age, how many years is he going to be there?
Yeah, and I still think that Mathis is a little concerning, especially because he was not a...
But I'm saying 2-3 years from now, like, wouldn't you want to already have your bookend and a guy who could play tackle?
Well,
and
I mean, you do. You've got to go get your, like...
As the number 20 pick, to me, if you're going to take the second or third corner off the board, go offensive lineman or move back, I'd rather you move back and you know what I mean, get some more picks, personally. But if you're going to take it that pick, I wouldn't reach at strong safety. I'd be taking the guy who's a stud O-lineman or the guy who's, like to me, Brad Jones, the cornerback.
From UConn. Yeah.
He's a statistical beast, and he played really well on the field.
Well, I was reading Mike Mayock.
He came from a small-town school, but, like, his...
Well, he's been to UConn. He's not a football school, you know?
Right, yeah.
You know, if he played basketball, he'd probably be a top prospect.
Oh, yeah.
But, I was reading Mike Mayock's, you know, whatever he does for the draft, like the draft grades and all that, and the mocks, and he posted a whole list of corners,
right,
that the Eagles should draft,
yeah,
and convert them to safety. He made a whole article about.
Tell me, Brad Jones is on that list.
I didn't actually read it. I just saw that he had it posted.
There are a lot of corners, and you know what's funny? You know what makes me believe in that? The player personnel director, Ed Marowitz, said today that there was depth at wide receiver, offensive line, and this is the exact words he used, cornerback, safety. meaning that guys who can do one or both. And they value that very much. They think they have guys on the roster, but they value guys who can play cornerback and safety. That's what they want. So that's why I don't think Landon Collins is really their guy. I see them more drafting a corner early, and maybe he's the guy who can play corner safety, and you see some solid impact from four or five different guys who are going to come in with different roles. And as you look at this team, they have depth in almost every position. I mean, even wide receiver, where you're, you know, you think you're lost from Macklin last year, Miles Austin, I mean, from the upgrade that you're going to see from Matthews from year one to year two, where he had a solid year one, Miles Austin coming in, and I mean, even if he only plays 12, 13 games, I mean, that's going to give you a lot of production. And Josh Huff, year one, year two jumper, now he's going to be asked to be a receiver and taught the position early. So now what you're going to see is you have three solid receivers, and they have speed. I mean, this kid, Perron Pratt, who's been on the practice squad from last year, I mean, 5'11", 195 pounds, and a 4.440 with a 35-inch vertical. That they're good numbers. And Chip Kelly can use speedy guys, and you know what I mean, especially a guy who's not going to be keyed on like Macklin and Deshaun were when they were here. They were the clear number one.
Definitely, definitely. And to join our Eagles conversation, we're going to bring in Sean from CornerPubSports.com. He's going to jump in right now onto the Eagles talk. Hey, Sean, how's it going?
What's going on, Sean?
Hey, how are you? How you guys doing?
Not too bad. Hanging in tonight, you know. 7 days to the draft, and I wish it was happening right now.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Week away, I can't wait. It's probably one of the more exciting drafts in recent memory, I think. So.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But especially with only a couple of days left before our minds are completely chained about what Chip Kelly wants to do with the way this draft is going to unfold, I want to ask you a question. Do you think that the Eagles are better off now than they were at the end of last season? Do you think this has been an offseason of improvement, or is he mismanaged?
That's a great question. I think it's tough to – if you look at it in portions, right, so if you look at it defensively, yes, they're better. Right? I think that's a pretty easy, you know, situation there. I think that's pretty easy to be agreed upon. Running backs, you would think they're better off, you know, with this type of style that they run.
Yeah, I would say they're better style fitted.
Yeah, but then you go beyond that. You know, quarterbacks, if Bradford's healthy, I think you're better off with Bradford than Foles when he's healthy. I think Bradford has a little more upside than Foles does. But then after that, you got wide receiver. And I think wide receiver right now, going into the draft, is weaker. Your offensive line's another year older, and you lost Harriman, and you might lose more on top of that. So it's kind of hard to say right now. But if you're going to go by if you're going to go by standards, I would have to say, because you built your defense up, maybe you give them a slight edge this year than last year.
Yeah, you know, and I kind of go with you. You know, it's hard to really predict that at this point, because really a lot of it, I think, is tied to how many games Bradford plays this year.
Right.
But, you know, you kind of know what Sanchez is. Who knows, maybe he shows an improvement from year one to year two, but you don't know how much. But you look at the last five Super Bowl winners, and you see, you know, maybe the best five quarterbacks in the league. So it's going to be tough for them moving forward. But what do you think they're targeting, their biggest need is outside of the quarterback question mark for this draft?
Well, right before I came on, you guys were talking about Landon Collins. And a couple weeks ago, I did kind of a mock draft. And I actually had the Eagles taking Collins. However, the more I'm hearing about him, you know, the kind of little tidbits you kind of hear about him, don't know if he fits the Eagles. If you're going to talk about the best, you know, something that Manuel said earlier today, we're going to take the best guy that fits our need. That's what he said today.
Yeah,
like, not necessarily the best player, but the best player that fits our team. I don't think Landon Collins is the best fit for their team as far as safety goes. He's an in the box guy. I would not be surprised. I really hate to say this because it's so boring. If they go offensive line, because it is a need. I guess it depends on who's there. But aside from quarterback, I think the sexy pick is wide receiver. And there's a lot of wide receivers out there. Jalen Strong's been you know, thrown around a lot lately, especially being a Philly guy. He's a big target, you know, 6'4". I mean, we haven't had a guy like that in a long time here. So I wouldn't be upset if they took him. But who knows? I mean, this is going to be unpredictable.
With all there's so many position needs they have. You know, I kind of tend to agree with you that maybe offensive line is probably the safest pick, especially with the age on the left side of your line and the way that Chip Kelly wants to run his team. It's really predicated on offensive line. That's probably more important than the running back, the wide receivers, or the quarterback.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of think that they might trade back. And you know, it was weird. I got a weird feel from watching that press conference today with the player personnel. Maris, right? And
yeah.
It kind of made me feel like he was almost seemed like he wanted to trade back. You know, they wanted, every time he was asked, he sounded like, I want more than 8 picks rather than less. So, like, especially when you think there's only 8 or 10 playmakers, maybe he sees a better fit. I can get 2 or 3 guys who can perform better in the second or third round than take the, you know, the guy left at 20.
Yeah, and that's not, I mean, and that's like an unpopular, you know, thought right now in Philly, because everyone wants to go out and be aggressive, and not saying that they won't be aggressive, but if they do trade down, it's not the worst thing in the world, because you have so many holes on this team. Because the wide receiver class is big again this year, and we're talking about safety, I think the guy you were thinking about earlier, the other safety that could be better, Demaryius Randall. Arizona State,
yeah,
I don't know if that's the guy. From Arizona State, they really think he's going to be a very good safety, and he might fit better with this team. And you're not going to take him at 20. You know, maybe you can get an earlier second-round pick and you take him with that. So I would not be surprised if they do that either. You don't hear that often that people say they're going to trade down because everyone thinks they're going to trade up. But what has Chip Kelly done this entire offseason has made any sense? Or you know, that you've seen coming, you know? So right. I would not be surprised.
Definitely. And now talking about, you know, trades and everything, I'm sure, you know, you've definitely heard the rumor of the 3-way San Diego, Tennessee, Eagles trade. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Say that in that 3-way trade, instead of getting the number 2 pick, we were given Phillip Rivers instead. Would you be okay with that?
If I'm Tennessee and I'm getting Phillip Rivers, you mean? Or if I'm... If I'm Tennessee, am I taking Phillip Rivers?
If you're Chip Kelly and you're looking at it, mm-hmm. and you're saying, all right, I'm not going to be able to get the number 2 pick. It's just too unrealistic in this 3-way trade. But I could end up with Phillip Rivers as my consolation prize. Would you jump on Phillip Rivers, even though he's older than Sam Bradford right now? Would you rather have Phillip Rivers?
Oh, I hear what you're saying. I would say in this situation, that the way it is currently, yes, I would do that. I'd be okay with that. I'm not so sure that, I mean, you know, Chip has specifically said this is a year-to-year thing. So, obviously, if you're looking long-term, he's not the answer either, because he's older as well. So, it is a win-now league, and Phil Rivers is probably a top, you know, I think it's safe to say he's a top 10 quarterback, probably top 7 quarterback in the league. You can definitely win now with Phil Rivers. So, I think that's a pretty good consolation prize.
Yeah, it might not be a bad move for the, you know, if it's just the number 20 pick and Sam Bradford. You know, that's not really a bad move, I would say, for quarterback. I don't know if he
could fit. I agree.
He knows
what Kelly's
system is. He seems like a guy who's going to – and they're the really coaches I feel like they succeed more than any other. He's a guy who's going to change his system and put players in their best situations to succeed. Now, he might want a certain thing, but he works for what he got. And you saw that in the first year, I think, with Andy Reid's team. And one other point about Chip Kelly, I feel like everybody now sees him as such a flashy guy. And I really don't think he is that. I think that he's had to overhaul this Andy Reid roster because these weren't his guys. It wasn't his system, and he's had to make a lot of moves. But I feel like if he's here for, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years, I feel like he's the guy who's going to be more conservative and more almost, you know, Bill Belichick-type guy who just, you know, stockpiles draft picks and doesn't have any bad character guys on his team. And, you know what I mean? Just a cruise win. And he's just missing his quarterback probably at this point.
Yeah, I mean, because if you look at his, aside from the speed offense, what does he do that's that much outside of, I mean, let me rephrase that. Not talking about his off-season moves as his first year at DN, because I think he did, like you said, wanted to overhaul that entire offense. But on the field, you know, what does he do that is really that crazy? He runs a vanilla offense. You know, it's just that it's sped up. You know, teams are catching on. He'll come up with something else, and he'll do other, not really necessarily trick plays, but he'll find a way to try to beat the defense he faces. I think over time he's almost going to have to become that more conservative guy, because you're not going to be able to be, pardon the phrase, balls against the wall the whole time. I mean, people are just, first of all, other teams aren't going to, you know, we're going to talk about off-season moves and such. You know, these other teams aren't going to keep dealing with a guy like that unless he, you know, does idiotic things and they're fleecing him over and over again, which I don't see that happening either. But I'm with you. I think over time you're going to see that he's a little more conservative. He's not as flashy as everyone thinks he is. Which isn't a bad thing. I mean, you know, he's building the team he wants to build, and hopefully, you know, we haven't won yet. So, you know, why not take a different approach?
Yeah, I think you have to in this league. You know, your chance is too short to live by anybody else's principles, I guess. And it seems like everybody's on board over that organization, and the players there seem on board. You know, I mean, you don't really. I've never seen a situation where a Pro Bowl elite player like DeSean Jackson gets cut, and you have 5 or 10 guys on your team come out and say they're happy about it. Not necessarily happy, but they're happy the way the direction the team's going.
Yeah, I remember Kelsey last year when they got rid of DeSean. You know, Kelsey did the same thing. He went right on and said, you know, don't worry, you know, we're changing direction, and I'm on board with it. You know, I mean, they do buy in. They definitely buy into him. They and if you don't, guess what? You're in Buffalo. You know.
Yeah. One more question before we let you go. I don't want to take up too much more of your time.
Sure.
But what are your feelings on the Hardy decision, the 10-game suspension? Do you think that was a little too strict, or right in line? I mean, it helps the Eagles out. We miss them twice. So.
Yeah, as an Eagle fan, you have to love it, because now you don't have to face them next year. but outside of that, you know, this guy is a repeat offender. I don't think it's strict. I think it's just right. I think they did it for once. And I think the NFL nailed him in the head with Greg Hardy. You know, you can't. I mean, enough's enough with this stuff. I mean, you remember, all year last year, you're watching these ads. You know, the stop domestic abuse ads and stuff like that. So if they hadn't, given Hardy a harsh penalty this off season, they were going to hear it, especially after what happened last year. I think it's just right. I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think he was. I think it was pretty close. You know what I mean, to where it should be, whether it was 8 or 10 games. The one thing I would say is, like, as long as AP, too, it's, I mean, I guess when they're on the exempt list, that's not really a suspension. But with how it went with Ray Rice last year and all the backlash they got, I can see exactly why they would do 10 games and leave no chance for them to be thought too lenient.
Absolutely. I mean, I thought it was going to be closer, maybe to like 6 to 8 games, because he didn't miss the entire season last year pretty much.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But
he got paid, though.
But he got paid. So, you know, 10 games, I'm fine with it. I didn't really want to see them take a whole other season away from him. I thought that might have been a little unfair. But I'm fine with 10 games.
And I really appreciate you coming on with us tonight. And we definitely want to have you back when this Eagles team takes a little better shape. Because I don't want to get your, you know what I mean? I don't want to start doing the record yet. It's a little early for that.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I mean, who knows? In a week, we might be, you know, just looking at a completely different team. You know, obviously starting with the possibility of Mariota, although I do think it's unlikely. But you never know. I mean, just never know with this team. So, but yeah, I mean, thank you guys for having us, or for having me, and you know, and friending us at Corner Pub Sports. You know, we'll be in touch with you guys.
Definitely. Thanks, Sean, for taking some time out and joining us. We really appreciate it. Everybody, that was Sean from quarterclubsports.com. Great evening, guys. They're going to be out. They have a live broadcast next week.
From check the draft.
Yeah.
Not from the draft.
Yeah, you can check
for
it out.
The draft.
You can check it out on their website.
Draft everywhere as long as you have a TV. In this day and age, anything can be brought in your living room. I've never been so dumbfounded with what my team could do. Like, usually I have a feel. They're going to go DN. This is the guy. These are the three guys. I mean, I haven't even put a lot of work into, like, because even you look, I looked at, like, 7 mock drafts in the last 2 days, and they've just been, everybody's way across the board. I mean, maybe, like, I mean, not even the top fives are usually not even the same. Nobody really knows. And, you know, maybe the top 8 or 10 are always in the top 8 are probably always in the top 10 order that they go in. And especially Marcus Mariota, because there's 3 or 4 boards, and I see this too. I understand that Tennessee thinks that Mariota is his guy, like you want to take him, but to me, you have Mettenberger, not saying that Mettenberger is anybody, but you could put Andrew Luck on that team, and he's not going to bring him to the Super Bowl. And there's so many other spots. So for me, if I'm Tennessee, I mean, I bet they're just saying they want to take Mariota because they're trying to get the most they can get for that number 2 overall pick, because they need as many players as they can. Tennessee was probably the worst team in the league last year. I mean, it gets right behind, you know, the only other Tampa Bay. I mean, they're number 2 pick, so got to be pretty bad. But to me to take, I mean, I see for Tampa Bay to take a quarterback, it's time for them. They need a quarterback that can get a few linemen. Their defense is decent. Their offense has a lot of skill players. They'll be fine, you know, with a good quarterback. They can win some games now, and especially in that South. I mean, Tampa Bay could go to the playoffs this year with Winston. I mean, Winston could be playing for a Super Bowl this year. So, for me, that's why they go Winston, because he's more ready in whatever system you put him in. I'm not saying Mariota can't come in and be ready. I mean, think he'd be ready for our system, but I don't see them trading up. And now, I think, all this hype about Mariota, there's no way he gets the 20. So I don't know who's going to trade. The Jets, I think, would scoop Mariota up. Even Washington might take him. You know, but then again, if Washington takes him, who knows? Maybe the RG3 now is on the trade market. So you never know which way it could go. And like I said, I mean, even when you stop talking about Mariota, you have, like I said, cornerbacks are big. What if a guy like Jalen Strong falls to the 20 pick? Because there's about 4 or 5 receivers said to go in the first round. But those 4 or 5 are monsters. I mean, Amari Cooper, you know, Jalen Strong, the kid White, and I think there's 1 or 2 other guys that is slipping my mind. There's so many of them.
Definitely.
But if one of those 3 or 4 guys who are just elite falls to the 20 pick, why wait to the second round to get the guy, you know, for value?
Absolutely. And we got the last guest of the night on right
now.
Our special guest is on the line. He's one of our good friends, Chris Ulmer. He lives down in Jacksonville. He's He's working on his book right now.
Yeah, our college roommate from Penn State.
Yes, and we're going to bring him on the line right now so he can discuss his book a little bit. Yo, Chris, are you there? Can you hear me?
My guys. How are you doing?
It's good to hear from you. It's been too long.
It has been. I hope you're all doing well.
Definitely. And from the looks of it, you got big things going on right now. You're working on your little book right now. Why don't you tell me about it a little bit?
Yes, I do. So you both know I've been a special education teacher the past 2 years, and I decided I want to give these kids and their families a platform to communicate really whatever it is they want to communicate. So I started writing a book, and I made a Facebook group just as a way to market the book, but this thing is blowing up. In only 10 days, we've had 1,500 followers. We have videos with 10,000 views, and we have children with all different kinds of diagnosis. We have autism. We have a kid with ACC. He's missing part of his brain. Just all kinds of diverse special needs children, and we're giving them that outlet to communicate whatever it is they want to communicate.
That's really good stuff, and I'm glad we get to take a few minutes to put this on our show, and I'm really great to hear that, you know, you're doing so great, and it sounds like such a great project.
Yeah, and, like, you got to tell me, how did you get the idea to just start this? Like, did you just sit there in class one day and just thought, hey, I'm going to put together this book of stories, or was it something you've had in the works for a while?
Well, it's funny. I had the idea a month ago, so this project is called Special Books by Special Kids. And the way I came up with that, I was at a wedding, and I looked beside me, and there's a couple with their child. And I look at the children's book the kid's reading, and I swear to you, every sentence was just, the dog is brown, the dog runs fast. Very, very elementary writing for a kid, so of course it's at a low level like that. But as I was reading it, I was thinking to myself, my students could do this easily. They could be authors of children's books. So the next few days I had them write, and they were outstanding. They were way better than what that kid was reading. So in the upcoming book, each chapter is going to be focused on a new special needs child, and every chapter will have two sections. The first section is the family's viewpoint of the child, what it's like to raise them, their fears, their moments of triumph, and I've been getting some very in-depth stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute. But section two is a story that the child creates. Fiction or nonfiction, whatever the child wants to create, it goes in the book, and we find a professional illustrator to make the pictures. So this thing just started at a wedding, and it's really evolved quickly. It's only been a few weeks.
That sounds like a very interesting way to do it, and it seems like it came together really well. And I know exactly what you mean. I have a younger brother and younger sister, and you know, I remember reading them the same books over and over again. And it's so cool that you get these kids to work on it themselves so they can, you know, read something that they put time in with, and then for kids for, you know, who knows how long to, you can really change the way children's books are being done.
And I think it's just a great outlet for these kids because they have so much creativity, they have so much intelligence, but due to their disabilities, they can't always communicate it to let everybody know. But through the interviews I've been doing, through the books these children have been creating, they're really going to be able to communicate just how intelligent they are. And really, that's the whole goal of this whole organization.
Now, are these only your students that can put stories in this? Or, because I know you're down in Jacksonville right now, but, you know, what if, you know, a kid in Texas wants, you know, he has a story that he wants to get in the book. Is it only for your students, or is there a way for someone outside of Florida to contact you to get their story into your book?
So for now, we're working on the first book in this series, and my goal is to have this become an ongoing series where it's just constantly stories are being released of families and the stories that the children create also. Right now, we have the 8 kids who will be featured in the first book. But, like I said, we have the website on Facebook that's just exploding overnight. Anybody can contact me through there, and we can tell their story through the Facebook, which thousands and thousands of people are seeing and replying to. But for now, I have the 8 kids for the book. But that doesn't mean you can't get your story out through a different medium.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. And definitely need to let us know when you're getting close to publishing. Is there anything we can do? Maybe we do a little event up here, too, to get nationwide exposure for this. Because it's really
I would love that. We're actually in talks with publishers now. We're going through the signing process. But everything looks very promising, and this is all a go, and it's very exciting.
That's really great to hear. I remember how, you know what I mean, from just being, you know, college students 4 or 5 years ago and now moving on one day to maybe change the world. I always knew that Chris Ulmer was going to do something good.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. That means a lot to me.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be right if we just let you leave the show without asking you questions about your beloved Eagles. So I'm going to start it right off the top. When are you going to buy your Mariota jersey?
I am buying my Tebow jersey first.
Yeah, right?
I love the move. And I look at Chip Kelly saying to the whole NFL, "You are all wrong. I'm going to take this project on, and I have the intelligence to make this happen." He's shown that he'll go against the grain, and it's just another example of it. You have got to love it.
I like it. I definitely like it. That's exactly it. It's a great way to look at it. But,
all right, gentlemen.
When is the next time you're going to come back to Philly? Are you going to come back to Philly anytime soon? I'll take you to an Eagles game this coming
year. Yeah, I'll definitely come back for an Eagles game. That's all you have to say. I'll book my flight now.
We're pulling our Wizwith pull, and see, we'll do a nice tailgate.
Yeah, I might know somebody.
And by then, we'll be able to have your book there, too.
It should be later this year, maybe in time for the Eagles season.
Awesome. Awesome. So you said everyone can contact you about this through your Facebook page?
Yes. Special Books by Special Kids. You type that in the Facebook, it'll pop right up. We have interviews with parents. We have interviews with kids, special needs kids. And it really lets you step inside of their world and mine. And it's eye-opening. I think everyone should take a look at it. Even if you don't have any special needs experience, it'll just build a sense of connection and empathy. And you'll really understand these kids.
Definitely. Right. And I have the link for his page actually on my computer, so I will link anybody that wants to go and check it out. I'll post it on the website, the link for that. Before we let you go, because I know that you're probably down there, you know, just got off the beach a little while ago, you probably want to relax. So is there anything
I'm actually staring at the beach right now. It's funny you say that.
That's funny. Is there anything else you want to let anybody know about your little project you got going on before we let you go?
I just want everyone to know that it's a whole different world that these parents and children are experiencing. And if you would like to see that world, go to that site, Special Books by Special Kids. You'll really understand where they're coming from, and it'll build that sense of connection. And I think you'll, next time you come into contact with somebody with special needs, you'll understand them a little bit more because of it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think we all communicate and learn in our own special ways. And that learning process for the whole public, especially from a project like this, can really impact how certain people are seen and treated. And you know, in years to come, we'll have better ways to deal with and increase the standard of living for a lot of people across the country.
I hope so. That is the vision and the goal.
Definitely. Hey, man, we really, really appreciate you jumping on here, taking up the time, promoting your book. Now, I'm going to tell you this very nicely. I'm going to hang off the phone, go enjoy the beach.
You know I will. I appreciate you making the time for me to come on, though.
Definitely, and we will definitely have you back on for your opinion later on in the season. Everybody, that was our good buddy Chris Ulmer, down in Jacksonville, Florida, promoting his book. That's going to be a huge book. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a very big book.
It's
going
to end up being a couple books. And you know what? I bet, I'll tell you right now, I bet that's going to fly off the shelves. I just think that's such a great project. And
I mean, his first project was that movie, that Run movie, and last show. And that got picked up by Netflix. So, I mean, I have no reason to believe that his book won't keep going like his little movie project did. Bless you. Mike's over here. He's,
you know, this time of year, the allergies.
Bless you. He's allergic to anybody that's in warm weather right now, apparently.
Yeah, so, I'm a little jealous of the beach. Especially on a day like today, I think it was like 40 degrees out of the way.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with this weather. Then when we got to the studio, it was like, you know, oh, I saw something about snow, and the only thing that went through my head was, I hope he's lying right now.
It better have been a joke. That's all I have to say.
Oh, I better was.
Until I see some Eagles football again, only then. You know what? I'm telling you, if football was played in the summer, I would hate the winter. There would be 2 days a year. It would be Christmas and New Year's, and everything else would just stink.
No, man, my birthday's in the winter.
3 days.
There you go.
My birthday's, I mean, September. That's not really winter. It's more fall. Or it's still, I mean, it's still kind of summer, really.
Yeah, it's still warm out.
But as far as, you know what I mean, football is really, you think about it, from September to January, February, usually February 1st or 2nd, football consumes probably, I would say, 60% of my day. And even in the off season, I think it only goes down to about 40%. I mean, I like other sports, don't get me wrong, but as far as being an Eagles, Philadelphia fan over the last 4 or 5 years.
Talking about, hold on, I had to interject real quick.
Go ahead.
I forgot to mention, you want to know how much free time I had today?
Oh, my God. How much free time?
I watched the whole Phillies game today.
From
start to finish. They lost 9-1. It was a businessman special.
To all of you who don't know, the only reason my co-host here watched the Phillies game, and I already know, I didn't even ask him, is because his dog the other day took his remote, and he can't find it. So he's too lazy to get up and change the channel by hand. I mean, that should be...
There could be worse stations to be stuck on than Comcast Sports Network.
Until the Phillies come on.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But,
you know, going out to all those Philadelphia Philly marketers, you know what I mean? And let's take a lesson. And once again, that game broke a new low for sales for that stadium. 17,000.
Yeah, 17,000, the lowest amount of people ever at Citizens Bank Park.
So, you know, speaking of that, and that being the only sport on now for us Philadelphia fans, that's why I crave football so much.
Oh, I got to tell you this stat. The Phillies have the NL leading amount of errors in the season.
They're bad at everything?
They're bad at
So the nine, the other
think,
eight
think
guys,
for, think about
the
this.
Other seven
Five,
guys
hold
on the field.
Hold on. 5 years ago, if I put you a piece of paper down in front of you with the numbers 1 to 25, could you fill out at least, you know, three-quarters of the roster?
Oh, definitely. I could probably fill out more.
I don't think I know a single person that pitched today.
I'm still on my Phillies boycott, by the way. They have not won 10 games.
No, actually, I think they only won like 4 or 5, maybe
so,
6.
Exactly. So I'm telling you right now, this is going to go until June. I mean, that's a lot of games left, but the way they're playing,
listen,
they just lost 9-1 to the Marlins.
Yeah.
And I only know that because you told me, because I'm on a Phillies boycott.
Yeah.
And all of you want to join me, Facebook and it tonight, Philly boycott. Phillies boycott. Let's not do Philly boycott. Phillies.
I mean,
I'm starting a trend.
Like,
I'll extend it to 20 games.
Listen, I watched this.
So I can get through the summer.
Yeah. I watched the whole game from start to finish. At one point in time, it was like 2 or 3 nothing, and then later it was 8-0, and I didn't stop watching. I don't know where those other runs came from.
That's how quick.
Yeah,
probably like
and then,
error.
Hold on.
Double,
let me talk
home
about
run.
There's two specific plays that I can that just sum up what the team is this year. All right. One play was it was a hard hit ball like to his third. Like I'm not going to admit that it wasn't a hard hit.
But and, they're in that Major League Baseball.
Yeah. But it was Cody Ashby, I believe he plays third base, right? Yeah.
He tried.
Well, this ball blew right past him. And Matt Stairs, who was a career DH, starts trying to talk about how Cody Ashby needs to keep the ball in front of him. A career DH is giving fielding tips now. That's how low it has become.
It is.
That's one. The second one is there was a ball hit in a foul territory, and I believe it was two outs in the fifth inning.
Right.
With the bases loaded, I believe it was. And whoever the shortstop is now, I guess Freddie Galvis.
Yeah.
And left fielder, whoever that is, I don't know who he is either.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Because Don Brown's hurt.
I don't know anybody in there.
You know, on a day where
hashtag Philly boycott.
On a day where it was a bullpen game. Alright?
Yeah.
You gotta help your pitchers
out. Just to interrupt you for 1 second. A bullpen game in the first month and a half? Month? 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
Probably about 3 weeks.
3 weeks? To a bullpen game?
Yep.
Has Cole Hamels pitched two games? Like
he probably pitched three, maybe even four. Because he's the number one starter. He gets top of the rotation.
It's crazy. Already. Okay.
Yeah. It is what it is. But, yeah, so the ball's hitting foul territory, right? The shortstop and the left fielder start both running towards it.
Shortstop?
Yeah. Like, it's like in foul territory, you know, over by, like, the tarp. Like, you know, where they keep that. You know, where the ball goes.
Right.
How many times did Jimmy Rollins run over there to grab that ball?
That's true. That's a Jimmy move. But the center fielder, though? Or
the left fielder. Do you think either one of them catches it?
Did they run into each other?
Nearly.
They definitely dropped the ball.
Oh, no. They didn't even come close to it. Like, they almost collided, and then the ball was behind them. So, to be honest with you,
they didn't knock it fair.
They both, I think they would have missed it, even if they didn't, like, I don't think either one would have gotten to it. Either way.
No, probably not. They do nothing. Like, other than, and it's sad because they have probably the one of the best three number one pitchers in baseball.
Yeah.
And probably the top three eighth, ninth inning guys in baseball with the way Giles and Papelbon.
Yeah. Well, like.
But everything in between garbage.
Like everything of this, it is exactly
absolute crap.
That's exactly right, and it's funny because I didn't coin the term, so I forget who initiated this term. So if you did, just tell me, and I'll give you credit for it. But the Mendoza 9, okay, all right. Six of the eight Phillies are hitting under the Mendoza line. Which is, for you, all of you that don't know, that's batting
200.
I'm pretty sure that I could fall backwards into 200.
Like, I would
not in a, like,
I could compete with these guys.
Yeah.
Not, I should never be in a major league team. I could never make it through the minor league system. But, like, if you put me in spring training with these guys, and I'd worked out for the year prior. I'd play baseball. I could hit 130 in majors.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could bunt for 130. Somebody, they're going to miss it. 1 out of 10 times, it'll be an error on my bunt.
Yeah.
And there you go. And I just got to get one hit, one pitcher, forget that I didn't bunt this time.
What if you face a Jamie Moyer that throws 70-something?
That'd probably be the best. I'd be like, it'd be like high school again.
Then you'll bat, you know, 170. You'll still be better than Chase Utley.
Oh, God. I just...
Let me see if I can find that exact quote. real quick. I'm going to try to pull it up. See if I, so I don't want
to like,
get it
like,
it's
not good for my heart. I don't think it's good for people's hearts to talk about the Phillies. Like, it gives people, like, agita. Like, just to say the name that's still our GM. Like, I won't even say his name. He's like freaking Voldemort. Like, I don't even want to say it. Like, Amaro. Like he really single-handedly killed the Phillies.
I mean, defy. Listen. We've done a lot of research for that book that we're going to write. And I can tell you that there's never been a GM in sports.
And no, that's
the kind of decline like that we're talking about. Like, it's you can't help but to laugh.
Really? But it's funny you say that, because what I want to say is to anybody who's going to listen to the show, I want you all to go to your computers between now and Monday. And what I want you to do is find me a worse GM. Now, not some guy who worked for 1 year and failed. Like
he
obviously,
was
a
GM for like 6 or 7 seasons.
We're talking about a guy who arguably inherited the best roster in Major League Baseball history.
Yeah, a team littered from top to bottom
with prospect talent out the wazoo still. Now, maybe none of those guys really came to fruition, but whose fault is that? Probably the rest of the town evaluators. But really, I defy you to find one GM who single-handedly tore apart a winner the way that Ruben Amaro has and continues to. There's not even one guy in the farm system. I mean, because you know why? Because if there was one guy in the farm system, he would be on the roster. Unless they were afraid to ruin him.
No, I did see that the Phillies have a top 10 prospect. But he's very far down in like the minor league system. I think he's maybe even a single A
still. Right, he's probably like 18.
Probably.
Like, I think
probably
like just 17, 18-year-old. Because like the last year or two, they've really changed over the people under Ruben Amaro. They're probably getting ready to get rid of him.
Well, this is the last year of his contract, so you don't have to worry.
They weren't
going to
pay.
There's
no reason to bring in anybody else to not do nothing with this team. I mean, maybe 4 years ago, yes.
You need to fire him before the draft, though.
This year's draft?
Yeah. I believe the draft is in July.
But at the end of the season, he's no longer. They can cut him right then.
No. He's just going to not get a contract renewal.
Right. And so the draft, that would be considered the next season.
Well, the thing is, do you really want him to take a shot at
it?
No, he would.
They don't even have a coach. Sandberg is terrible. He's got to go.
Not yet. Yeah, he's.
But I think that's why they brought him up. Let's see if this dude's anything decent. See if he can make some good
decisions. Well, he won like a couple of manager of the years in the minor leagues.
But that's the minor leagues, you know what I mean?
Well, no, I'm saying if you didn't bring him up, you would have risked losing him to another team.
Now you're not going to lose him nowhere. He's not going anywhere.
I mean, looking back on it, you're like, okay, well, we should just let him walk. But at the time,
he might as well be Donald Brown, as far as I'm concerned. Dominic Brown as manager.
On that note, we're going to start to wrap it up, man.
That's a good note to wrap it up.
That is a good note to wrap
as
up.
Always, it's your host here, Justin Emery, and
yes.
Michael Irano, repping WizWith Radio.
Yes, at the
Red into a new era.
Absolutely, we're at Red Sound Studios out in Warrington right now. Ben's in there running the mix and everything for us, making sure we sound great like usual.
And once again, hit us up on our website at wizwithradio.com or Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and ask us any question you want, and we'll get back to you during the week. I know it's only 7 days through the season, and really interesting with what might happen.
Definitely. We want to thank all of our guests, Justin Panatti for jumping on and talking NBA, Sean, Corner Pub Sports, dropping down, talking Eagles. We got Chris Omer, our buddy, with his books, Special Books by Special Kids.
And I think that everybody should take a time who listens to this to definitely go over and check that out. And, sports is a great thing, but helping the community and helping the kids is really what's going to push us through to our future.
Definitely. Next week we got the draft. I will be first in line to purchase my Marcus Mariota jersey.
Some more NBA great games coming up too.
Oh, definitely.
It's going to be a great weekend.
Definitely. Thank everybody for tuning in.
Go get a cheesesteak and have a WizWit day.
I mean, I don't know. It's kind of an evening. You should tell them to have a WizWit night.
No, tomorrow. They can have a WizWit day tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Now.